everybody needs an accountant. And so I just thought, well, it's going to be like, you know, every business. So I thought, well, I've got to start somewhere. And so it was just about having a budget and a goal and a mission and doing everything I possibly could to get my name out there to sign up flights at the very early stages. And so I sold my car at the time. I think I sold it for like £8,000. So I had to pay mortgage, bills and everything out of that. So that was just like, okay, what's my run rate? How long can I survive? And then having to decide whether I continue a business or not, I gave myself like 3 to 4 months, maximum 6, and then decided, right, if it doesn't work from then I'll probably have to get a job. And so I knew what I needed to earn at the very beginning, how much revenue I needed. And so it was like, right, I need 1 or 2 clients per month or whatever it was at the time to get there. So that's how I started.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's purchasing with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've invited along Alex Falcon-Huerta to talk to us about her apparently dream lifestyle, traveling the world as a fractional CFO. It's something that I've met more and more people who used to work in industry and have been trying to figure out how they can use their skill set to work from perhaps anywhere in the world. So just before I ask Alex to introduce herself, I want to do a shout out to Bridget Harris, who introduced us, another OG dream business guru that you can also listen to on the podcast in episode 91, I think. So Alex, thanks very much for coming along today. Maybe you could just tell us a bit about you and where you are today.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm Alex Falcon-Huerta. I'm the founder of Soaring Falcon Accountancy. I started my business 9 years ago, but been in the industry for a lot longer than that. So I have a cloud-based paperless business where I take care of SaaS clients, so people from overseas usually, who then want to launch in the UK market and then vice versa. So if they are in the UK and they want to set up overseas, then I have a really good international network, so they don't necessarily need to go to a large firm. And so, yeah, I've been running that digitally and remotely for this duration. And I'm looking forward to talking about my journey with you guys today.
So you've built up for yourself online a reputation as a sort of cloud computing expert when it comes to accountancy especially, but it has not always been that way, I guess. I mean, where did you start off in your career and what made you decide something had to change?
So I guess it goes back to like the school days where, for example, well, we used to do like handwritten books and my writing was really terrible, and then they introduced computers, and when they did, you know, I was really excited because my projects looked beautiful and it was all typed and nice and tidy. When I went to my first job, it was very, very, very manual, and when I asked them if I can bring in Excel, they asked me what the benefit was, and so that was quite challenging because I was one of the they had computers but they didn't use the computers or Excel or anything like that to do like working papers or to do like the calculations. And I was so used to using Excel from school, like I didn't know any other way. So learning the manual side was really awful for me. It was very, very long-winded. And so I guess I just tried to automate things using tools that were essentially going to make my job easier and faster and more efficient and actually more accurate. And so even the calculators with the paper coming out, I don't even remember their names. You know, we had to put, you know, use products like that. That was horrendous. So then when the cloud technology came out, like it was even better for me because it went from paper to Excel desktop to then cloud. So then that then was like an enabler for me to be able to then look into setting up a digital business. So it went from very, very manual to now being as automated as possible. So it was a major, amazing transformation within my life, my career path.
It sounds like you went from a transition from on staff in an accountancy firm, or was it a traditional business, and then decided to step out and do it yourself?
I worked within like small firms and medium-sized firms during my career, where I worked in like different areas. So I work in audit, international audit. I'd work doing payroll and tax and management accounting and all different areas. I would say that from a young age, I'd always wanted to set up my own business. I just didn't know what that was going to be. Back in the school day, somebody said, if you learn to be an accountant, you'll save yourself a lot of money because accountants were expensive. And it was just one of those things. I thought, okay, I'll think about it. It's also like a skill for life. It's also one of those areas where it's like, even if I didn't become an accountant or stay as an accountant, you know, just having a business, you're more likely to be successful because you know about finances.
Right.
And so, yeah, so it was just one of those areas where I was like, great, I'll then start my journey. I did young enterprise at school. I did business and finance. I did Association of Accountant Technician. I did another business course. And then I did ACCA, which is Association of Chartered Certified Accountants. So yeah, kept studying and studying until I got there.
Okay. Well, you've managed to do something interesting with your business, which is maybe the hardest thing in computer science. They say there's only two hard problems, one of which is naming things. Now, your business, I can see your name includes Falcon, but what's the story around coming up with the name?
You know, when you think about a business, you do think of a name and the brand and the marketing and how you're going to be seen to the world. And essentially, it's one of those areas of, okay, I didn't want people to think that I was like in a partnership. So if I used my surname, which is Falcon Huerta, people might have assumed that there was two people or more partners. So that was something that I was like, right, I didn't want that confusion. I wanted to use like the name Falcon in my name at some point because it was like a bird of prey. And so it was just about using and finding different things that would resonate with my journey. And so Soaring Falcon was then picked out of a bunch of names. And so it was, you know, kind of like achieve and maintain your highest. So it's kind of really went well with the whole like multiple destinations, like digital nomading. I always believe in like you start with like the end goal of where you want to be and then you work towards it. And so that's kind of what I've done and like maintained throughout my journey. It's like, I want everybody else to do that. It's like, you know, you can, you know, watch me from the ground or join me kind of thing. So, yeah, so that's where Soaring Falcon came from.
Awesome. Well, naming is super hard and I'm rubbish at it. We used to be called Rubber Stamp when we started and I hated it and I wanted it to change because I thought it was not professional enough. And then we changed to Procurement Express and promptly sales fell off a cliff. So naming is really hard. I've only been bad at it. So, all right, you've alluded to it a little bit there. What we're going to do in this episode is talk about how you've created this, what I'm going to call dream lifestyle. I don't want to oversell it, but some people describe it in the pejorative, which would be a lifestyle business. I so often get accused of building a lifestyle business. So tell us about your lifestyle and what your business gives you today, having built it up, and then we'll get into how you managed to put the different bricks together to get there.
So going from the very, very beginning of like what my dreams and aspirations were growing up. And so one of those things was I wanted to travel. I didn't go to university. I didn't have a gap year. I didn't have the funds. I didn't have any backing or any support back then, but it was always something that I wanted to do and achieve in my life. And to be able to travel the world, it was just like a dream since I was a kid. And I just used to watch the planes fly over the home and like, I wish I was in that. And like, where's that going? I was always very curious. I'm sure I used to even wave at them as well, thinking they could see me. It was just one of those things that I was like, okay, I definitely want to do this. How am I going to do it? And as I kind of progressed through my work life and understanding like policies, procedures, culture, holidays, and taking the roles of, you know, going into management and understanding the roles of being in a job and then having to take time off, like I found that really challenging. And so I was like, this is not going to be as easy as I thought. It's not going to be, I can just take 3 weeks off or a month off. And people were doing it. They were taking like sabbaticals, they were taking 6 months off, but then potentially might not come back to their workplace. So they were just always reliant on taking that risk. And then are they going to have work coming back? So my thoughts around it was the only way I can achieve this is by setting up on my own and not necessarily having that goal in mind of I want to make £1 million. It was literally for a lifestyle business and to do the things that I can and I am able to do in my life while I'm here on this world. And I just didn't want to wait until, you know, I'm a retirement age and then travel the world and then struggle to do the things that I could have done when I was younger. And I've heard from many stories, like from friends and colleagues who are older, like if I could go back now, I would do it. Essentially, it was like, right, I'm going to achieve this in my business and I'm going to do all the things and live my best life to what I want. So it's not for everybody, but it's definitely something that I wanted to do. And so that's why, yeah, I started Soaring Falcon.
Now, I wasn't as organized about it, but in the early 2000s, I read the book 4-Hour Work Week by Timothy Ferriss. Me and my then girlfriend decided, okay, well, if we could get, say, $2,000, maybe even less, maybe $1,500 a month in from some business, we could move to Argentina, live off that. And that was as far as our planning went. And that's what we did. We got a business together. It was just about bringing in $1,500 a month, got on a plane. My dad gave me $3,000 at the airport. He was like, he was sure we were going to be back on the next plane. He was like, listen, you're never going to make it, but take this money. I was like, thanks, Dad. I got on the plane and I never came back. Well, I did come back, but many years later. So that was our plan. So did this idea of earning dollars and spending pesos, was that part of your plan? How did you build up to a level where you were able to work wherever you want to?
Going through, again, joining workplaces and things like that and setting up a company and then utilizing technology. You know, it wasn't just like an overnight process of, oh, I'm just going to go away running a business. I have a plan and work towards that. But it, of course, there were so many tools available and so many groups available to me to look at other countries and see that I can actually live a better life for a low value and still earn the currency in the UK. So I do it smartly. And so in a way where, you know, I'm making savings. And so obviously I want to have a good time and enjoy myself. I don't go wild and crazy. And when I go away, lots of people would think that I'm always on holiday, but it's not the case. Like I'm going there and living like a nomadic life and just living the life I would do as if I was like back home in the UK. So it's just keeping it grounded and just keeping into like a routine where possible, but enjoying the culture around me.
So if I was going to ask you for two recommendations, one for today in 2024, if you're listening to this, where would you recommend as the best city with the lowest cost, but the highest standard of living? And then give me another city where you've made it, maybe you're up at your level and you're like the most baller lifestyle. If money's no object, where's the best place to live? So,
okay, I would say in 2024, I would say probably Thailand. And there's multiple places around Thailand where you can just kind of like do so many things and not have to worry about anything. And it's not cost you hardly anything. Like even the food and stuff is incredible and amazing. And so chilled and laid back. I would say the opposite to that amazing city is Sydney. Like absolutely love Sydney. You could go wild and crazy, but there's so many things in Sydney as a city. So you have the beach life, but then you've also got amazing things to go and see as well at the same time. So, but it's a really hard question.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of great places in the world there. Okay, well, fair enough. We sold a sizzle a little bit. Let's talk about how practically you can start to build this with cloud tools. We're all familiar with cloud tools. I think most businesses, I don't know who does their accounts on-prem anymore, certainly not in the SME sector. Can you tell us a bit about what are your go-to tools as your service offering? So what sort of software do you normally go into with a business?
Clouding tools that not many people are familiar with. So I use Xero. So Xero is the main, is my main tool, the bookkeeping tool. And so I would then use Ignition as my proposal software tool. Then I will use Dext, which is basically an invoice capturing tool. Everything has to be automated. And so they're the three main ones, I would say, that I would 100% implement from the start. And then in terms of other stuff outside of that, for example, payment tools, like Teleroo is one of them, because essentially that helps us to up bulk load payments rather than having to pay manually.
Well, let's go through this, because in terms of build your own business, I mean, Xero is a general ledger, basically. So people will be familiar with that. So what does Ignition do for you? How has that helped you?
So what it is like it's a proposal software tool, but it allows me to, like we have the letter of engagement, like your contract that you need to sign. And so it allows me to have that automated. And so everything is captured within the letter of engagement. So I don't have to manually type in the company, the date and their services. It allows me to have like set services or packages. And so I put in all the services in there. I can then attach videos and I can attach like my brochure about what my company does and send videos. So I use Blue Dot and Loom. So I can attach links in there. I can then explain everything clearly. It then creates the invoice every month because I have the recurring monthly income in Xero, and it takes the payment as well. So it does like, it automates like all of my processes. Because it also has an open API, it allows me to tag on Zapier. So I can use Zapier to zap things from Ignition into Slack, into Google Drive. And then my team then has that information as well once that proposal has been done. So it's automated a lot of my onboarding and taken away a lot of the time that I was spending doing manual work, which is my focus is what work am I doing? What tools can I implement to take and help me with my time so then I can spend time doing something else, either relaxing or building the business or whatever it is I choose to do at that time. And so I think that was one of the most important tools I implemented from the start.
So Ignition, you put it in the class of practice management, would you?
Yeah, I would say practice management proposal software.
For people who want to go from one up so you can get on board with it without needing a big rollout or anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Dext, is that something you use just for yourself or do you implement it with all your clients? How does that help you?
So with Dext, I implement it to all my clients. So it's an invoice capturing tool. Everybody will have an app or they have an email address. And so instead of like people sending things by post or paperwork, like it's a Xero paper business. And so they would then take a picture of their receipts or email their invoices in. That then has kind of a lot of AI built in and lots of tools where the technology then takes that data and then it captures like the VAT or GST if you're global, or it captures like the category. So you put all the rules in at the very, very beginning. So it has a little bit of a setup. Then once that information is in the system in Dext, it's then published into Xero or your accounting software already created document, so you don't have to manually input that data, and then it comes with an attached file, and then it's got more smarter things around it where it then auto matches payments, so you can auto publish it, and there's like loads of other rules around it. So again, like it eliminates the time for us and for the client. And so with the bookkeeping side, it then reduces the amount of transactions that essentially we may have to do manually.
Okay, so I'll reference people at this stage to your website, soaring-falcon.co.uk, and you have many different tools on there. Obviously, there's Xero is kind of a platform, I guess, and you can plug in lots of things there to try and solve problems for clients. I want to ask you about a little bit about that. So is that an income stream for you being able to recommend some of these tools? And do you think that's worthwhile doing? Because there's always a trade-off between your reputation and recommending something and then any revenue you might be able to get from the software provider for recommending that tool.
Yeah, of course. So every software tool that you see on my website is one that I physically use or I use with my clients, and I would recommend it because it really works. And they're normally like the high-end ones of where we've tried and tested loads of products. And so I would only have products on there that I truly believe in. I'm passionate about technology and I also don't want to make mistakes with client stuff. So it's quite important to me. In terms of the revenue side from it, so there are a couple on there that would do referral income. But at the same time, it's like that client can or that person can go onto that website or go directly. So it's not something I keep track of. It's, yeah, cool. Like if you go from my website and I get something from it, I normally pass that on. But if they don't, then that's fine also. If there's a connection made later on and we recognize that, then we let the person know, then I'll try and get a discount for that person.
And I'll ask a selfish question here, which is, what do software companies do right when they're trying to build affiliates? I guess that you call it an affiliate relationship. So what do the best software companies do offer when they're offering an affiliate opportunity like that for professionals like you?
So the best ones, I would say, there's really good marketing. We have our own website link. We'd normally have either a percentage discount for the client or lower a physical payment over to us. And so they would then include us on their marketing as well and include us in case studies and research and webinars. So it's not just one way, it's both ways. It genuinely is people we partner with and work with. So I wouldn't have some random person or app partner on there that I don't use. Unless I'm like, right, okay, that's for a specific industry and I've seen how it works and I understood it. And then we have like a really good relationship in terms of like with the support, things like that.
All right. Well, that's interesting. You said something there, which actually makes sense to me, which is you're able to provide the software cheaper to your clients than they would ordinarily be able to get it because of those relationships as well. So it's a value add for your clients when they come on board with you. They're not going to be paying full price for a lot of these pieces of software, which I like. It's good. All right. So let's move on to your business model a little bit. I'm SaaS business. I'm the only one with a recurring revenue allowed around here. Okay. I don't like this idea of service people coming in trying to steal our sauce here. Now, the obvious challenge there is like scaling that. It's a nice idea that you have whatever dozens or hundreds of people paying you monthly. But how do you bridge the gap between getting your first, second, third, and then enough recurring revenue to actually make a living off? How did you manage to jump that bridge?
I guess everybody needs an accountant.
Right. Okay.
And so I just thought, well, it's going to be like, you know, every business. So I thought, well, I've got to start somewhere. And so it was just about having a budget and a goal and a mission and doing everything I possibly could to get my name out there to sign up clients at the very early stages. And so I sold my car at the time. I think I sold it for like £8,000. So I had to pay mortgage bills and everything out of that. So that was just like, okay, what's my run rate? How long can I survive? And then having to decide whether I continue a business or not, I gave myself like 3 to 4 months, maximum 6, and then decided, right, if it doesn't work from then I'll probably have to get a job. And so I knew what I needed to earn at the very beginning, how much revenue I needed. And so it was like, right, I need 1 or 2 clients per month. Or whatever it was at the time to get there. So that's how I started. And yeah.
I mean, I think like burning the boats is the way to do it. I mean, I know a lot of people are on the edge of wanting to set up by themselves. And then, you know, there's all sorts of excuses. Like there's, I have kids, I don't have kids, I'm too old, I'm too young, everything in between. But at the end of the day, you've got to burn the boats. And having a gun to your head, I don't think is a bad thing. I think, you know, the way you do it is the way I did it, which is just like, just jump off a cliff and see what happens. Because there's nothing worse than kind of half doing something, you know, and you're kind of half trying to get clients together and half doing it. And you, A, it's way harder that way. And B, even psychologically, it's so easy to just relapse back into your cozy salaried employment. And so, yeah, that's the lesson I take away from that. For sure, I can resonate with that. So you've alluded to building a team, and it sounds like you've built up the operation side, and I guess you would have been keeping the trains running on time would have been something that you have professional experience with. I'm sure a lot of people working in finance teams would, because there's training, literally you go to tons of school for that. But what you've alluded to there is, well, how do you get your first client? What does getting out there mean? And how do you actually go and acquire your first, second, third, 10th, 20th client? What's your marketing strategy?
I think the biggest one here is about your client avatar. And I think that if you know what your client avatar is and you know exactly what your clients should look like, and like, for example, mine are like SaaS global within the accounting space, or sometimes not, but just like reporting tools or within the accounting space, they are, you know, tech savvy, they love technology, right. They want to grow. So there's like a whole list of things that I consider before I sign a client up. And what I recognize is that if I know what that client looks like, I know who to market to. And I did that from the beginning. So I traveled to New Zealand in the early days. I went to the international conferences. I spoke to SaaS partners there, and I let them know, I'm from the UK, I can take care of your UK business, I'm your feet on the ground, and I know UK legislation inside out. If you come to the UK, I can help you launch into the UK market. So I've said that from the very, very beginning.
You're referencing Xero there, right? Who are based in New Zealand, am I right?
So they are based in New Zealand, and so they used to have the conference in New Zealand. They've moved it to like a global conference now, but not in New Zealand anymore. But it was starting off going to international conferences and really learning who I want to work with, again, around the travel. So always having that in mind of, if I was based anywhere, if I'm working with New Zealand or Australian clients, does it matter on my time zone? Probably not. I'm going to be close to the time anywhere else around the world.
Sounds very expensive also. I like the idea of that.
It's cheaper than marketing.
Yes, of course. So event marketing, that's what I heard there. Actually showing up, going, meeting people and building relationships to help you then get your first couple of clients. So tell us a little bit about that. So we'll think about how you did that and then how we would do it again today in 2024. A lot of these software companies have partnership managers. I guess Xero did. Who did you meet at that conference and how did that turn into clients for you?
So I was, again, really fortunate when I set my business up because nobody was interested in cloud technology. Accountants were really behind and they just weren't interested at all. So I was like classified as a trailblazer, early adopter of cloud technology within an accountancy firm. But you had these amazing technology software companies that were just desperate to fix pain points within what we do. And so they were startups. They were people, you know, just coming along and it'll be the founders. And they're the ones that go to the conferences, you know, hoping to get their product on the market. And they have the growth plans of like going overseas into the UK. And so it was really good for me because I was a startup. I was cloud. I was ahead of the game. People didn't even know what Xero or what Dext or all those products were at the very, very beginning. And so I was fortunate enough to be at the stage where it was then transforming businesses into cloud technology and it being like an amazing difference it was making in their life. So that's how I managed it back in the day.
Step one is build a time machine. Step two, profit. But if you were today looking for a similar opportunity, what are the trends in accountancy or even technology that someone could take advantage of? Are there niches emerging? Are there other ways that you could do something similar? If you had to do it again today, what would you do?
One of the most important things about setting up a business or your target market is pick something you're passionate about, because if you enjoyed a certain subject or a certain area, that's what you're going to be working with day in, day out for however long you run your business for. And so if you love, I don't know, like sports or something, then you might want to then have your brand around sports personalities. And so that would be your focus. That would be your target. And that's who you go to see. You go to your, you know, your conferences or your events around that and learn and understand where those people are. So mine is about travel and technology. So I'm in my space. And when I do go to my conferences now, like I go to see the startups and I go to see the people who generally want to move to the UK. And I ask lots of questions. I speak to the event organizers and I find out who are the people that I need to meet, who's traveled over, or I speak to people overseas and ask them about their conferences, which are the bigger conferences for me to attend. Can I speak at that conference? And do various things to kind of get my name and brand out there.
So going to a conference is one thing, but then if you can get yourself on stage, sort of it's a parallel effect. Would you even bother going to a conference if you couldn't speak?
I do. Yeah, I do go to the conferences if I can't speak. So I went to SaaStock, Austin, Texas. I got to meet amazing founders there in the technology space. And so it was really, really inspirational for me to learn and understand what technology companies look for and what their pain points are, because I can then build that into my delivery.
I mean, another one I went to this year is SaaS Open, which is really good. Jason Latka runs that. SaaS Talk is great. SaaStr, probably maybe a bit too big. I feel like you need this sort of Goldilocks zone of some of them are just full of other people selling things to you. I'm not going to mention any names, but some of them are like that. And some of them are enough actual founders and people working there to actually have a real conversation. So pick carefully. So I have to ask you about your website. It looks beautiful. How did you put it together? Because actually, normally, let's be honest, I'm a technology guy and I go to most CFO websites and not all of them look great, if I can say that kindly. So how did you get such a good looking site together?
I trust the people that are good at their job. And so I have a marketing guy and he's very creative and I love all the stuff that he does. And usually I say to him, right, okay, I want people to know that I'm international. I want people to know that I have a global brand. I want people to know that I help them in the UK. And I want them to know like I'm a digital nomad or nomad lifestyle. So I'll just explain to him all the things I like and then I let him go away and create it. And then he will normally come back. And sometimes I'm like, I'm not sure about that. But that's because it's me and it's not about, it's like I have to think about the market and who's my target market. He is my target market. So if he likes it, it's going to be good for everybody else. So it's like clear, it's like vibrant. And for me, I think it ticks all the boxes of what I asked for. So yeah, just keeping it simple as well. I didn't like go in and make millions of changes or anything like that. So it's just going with those specialist people and allow them to be as creative as they need to be.
Okay. And is he full-time with you or is he fractional as well?
He's fractional.
Okay. Mm. All right. So step one, find out who this awesome guy is. Step two, get your awesome website. So maybe people can reach out to you on LinkedIn and you might be good enough to hook them up.
It's on my website.
It's on your website. Okay. You don't even have to do that. All right. Cool. So let's wrap things up now. I have a question I'd like to ask traditionally at the end of a podcast, which is who is your business hero and why? So Alex, who's your business hero and why?
So this is a tough one and I do have a few, but I would say the most recent one is Michael Wood. And he is the founder of Dext, which used to be called Receipt Bank. And most recently, the founder of Translucent. And so I would say he is solving a problem which, since I have like global clients, like his new product is about multi-entity, and I know it's like one of the biggest challenges. And so I'm just in awe of all the things that have been developed, like multiple apps all at the same time, and how he's achieving that and doing that. And so yeah, it's a huge inspiration, and I just can't wait for it to be like fully ready so that we can start implementing it. So yeah, it's brilliant, and can't wait for it to be released.
I think he's hit the nail on the head there. I heard so many people were like, you know, we like Xero, we like QuickBooks, but we've got to go to NetSuite because we have 14 locations and our 12 hotels or whatever it is, and there's just no choice. Mm. It's kind of weird, actually. This whole sort of next tier of software up, like NetSuite and some, a lot of other ERPs and so on, they're basically, a lot of their value is just being able to handle multiple locations and keep things private from each of those. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, but if you don't build it in from the ground up, you don't have it. Good luck. So thankfully we do at Procurement Express, but you know, a lot of tools like the big ones can't, I guess. It's too late. They've gone too far down the road. So Alex, this has been a lot of fun. I love getting some of the digital nomad vibes while we chat. I can imagine I'm somewhere exotic. So that's nice. I get the holiday vibes just by chatting. So how can people get in touch with you if they want to become a client, or maybe if they want to just hear more about how you've built this lifestyle for yourself?
So you can reach me on LinkedIn, Alex Huerta, or via my email, alex@soaring-falcon.co.uk. They're probably the best two. Always happy to help people out and talk to them about my journey. And if I can support you in any way, then that's great.
So if you got this far in the podcast, thank you very much. I'd recommend you sign up for our newsletter at procurementexpress.com/newsletter, where you'll get to see interviews like this one with Alex and many other fractional CFOs, software founders, and even people from my own team get interviewed. If you are a fractional CFO or running an online accountancy firm like Alex, I'd love to hear from you, hear about your story and how you've built up your dream business, and hopefully get the word out about how others might be able to do it as well. Thanks very much, Alex. You're a star.
Thank you very much. Take care.